Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Castabra's podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. With me are Brian Terranova and James McLean. Now, we were going to be discussing subject A this week. We're going to put it back for a couple of weeks. We've just heard the sad news about the passing of the esteemed character actor Philip Maddock, who, despite not having appeared in Doctor Who since 1979, nevertheless casts an interesting shadow across both our favourite time-travelling show and many other long-running and many other British television institutions over the years. For me personally, Philip Maddock's probably most recognisable as Mahendri Solon from the excellent Brain of Morbius from 1976, in which he attempted and succeeded in reanimating an ancient Time Lord master criminal despo. But, you know, that's only one of five universe-related appearances that you could have seen on screen. He's also done Big Finish and appeared in the second of the 1960s Dalek movies. But enough from me. Brian, do you have a favourite Philip Maddock appearance in Doctor Who?
I agree that Brain of Morbius was a good one, but I have to say I've always been really into the Warlord from the War Games.
Uh-huh.
Partially because when I found out that it was him, a couple years ago this was, whenever, I don't remember, but when I found out it was him, I was shocked because, you know, when you look at him in some of his other appearances, it's very clearly the same actor, but as the Warlord, he looked so different to me. And he played him very differently. I thought it was just a very good character.
Yeah. What about you, James?
Following what we've said before, I rather liked him in Planet of Evil, where he didn't play any roles, but we all seem to believe that he did, which I'm sure he was brilliant in that. I don't know quite how we all thought the same thing, that he was in there and he wasn't. I'd probably have to agree with Brian. War Games, I think, is my favourite moment. I'm not a massive fan of Brain of Morbius.
What do you mean you're afraid you have to agree with me?
Well, I was talking more from a podcast perspective. It's nice to be diverse and different.
I see.
But I am forced to have to agree with the American guy. And
the American guy who likes The Runaway Bride.
Adolphus. Yes, I like The Runaway Bride.
David Tennant.
Poor man has died here.
Yes, well, that will appease our one listener this week, who this week is Russell T. Davis. yes, Runaway Bride was a very good one. So I think the War Games. Can you just list Brian or Christian, whichever of you two, you're interchangeable. Could you just list which ones he was in again for the audience at home, more than me?
Yeah, Philip Maddock was appeared in The Crotons as Elik, in the War Games as the Warlord, in The Brain of Morbius as Solon, and The Power of Krall as Fenner. Now, I was watching The Power of Krall not so long ago, by necessity, as I was watching The Key to Time. I don't actually mind The Power of Krall that much. I know there's a lot of ridiculous visuals, but I don't mind the storyline. I think it's a good story. And there's a DVD extra in which Mr. Maddock kind of intimates that he wasn't particularly happy with the part he was given and thought he was playing it the other main control room role, which I thought was quite interesting because I thought he was pretty good in it.
I liked it because it was a different character for him. He actually wasn't necessarily the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was pretty good. I'm kind of glad he had that role.
Yeah, I think he did quite well with it, considering he apparently didn't want to do it.
Yeah, right.
And of course, he appeared in the Doctor Who, the second Doctor Who movie. We call it the second Doctor Who movie. It's not really a Doctor Who movie, is it? It's a Daleks movie. in Dalek Invasion Earth 2150, as
saying that, who gets lead billing? It's not Dalek starring Dalek, co-starring Blue Dalek and Gold Dalek in supporting roles. With
just Dalek. Because they had a bad Peter agent Cushing. Doesn't mean that they're not the star.
Yeah.
Although they've got a very bad union then. But yeah, no, point taken. I like him in that, actually. I think he plays that role.
Too.
Very nicely.
In fairness to the Daleks, I don't think setting up a theatrical union is top of their list of priorities.
Well, they've actually had a fairly, fairly strong union so far as if you count Terry Nation as a union, who's very much protected them being used without him making money.
Yeah, all right then. Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I agree. Philip Maddock was really good in the second film. I thought he was very much Philip Maddock, but that's what he's good at doing when he plays that sort of slightly superior.
Broccoli, he was called.
Broccoli, and he managed to get through with that name. He managed to pull it off. Well done. Broccoli's not an easy name to pull off on a character, but he did it.
Sorry, Brian, what were you going to say?
No, I was saying that some actors really can't pull that off. Like, he was able, like James said, to basically be himself. But it's one of those things that you watch and you enjoy because, you know, he's very good at being himself, and is a very good character. And not to downplay him as an actor, but I mean, like, he certainly got a very specific personality.
Yeah, he's typecast within a particular, I mean, not through a narrow type, but a particular range of characters that he's always suitable to play.
Right. And some actors, you know, when you watch them, you don't mind that because they're so good at that. Whereas other
like
ones,
Tom.
It just gets very droll. Exactly, like Tom. I mean, that, you know, not the downplay, but yeah, exactly.
Like Brian Blessed, but in real life. Cause
who?
Brian Blessed.
Who?
Who? Who?
Oh, you mean Brian Blessed!
Yes.
Him.
He was on Pointless this week as a celebrity guest for a game show. Yeah. And he just had me in tears. He's just the epitome of a cartoon character brought to life, isn't he? He's just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Have you guys ever seen that Henry?
Yes.
Zero. Yes, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yes. That's,
yeah, I thought I had, yeah.
Have a look on YouTube for that.
Hey?
For what? Oh, the Henry VIII things?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good. But no, I saw him in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang the first time I was ever over in England. And he was playing the villain, and he was just, like, freaky as hell, you know, classic Brian Blessed. But when it came time, you know, like, it was the early show, so there were lots of kids in the audience. So he was doing his freaky self, but the way that he would engage the kids while he was, like, he would go from being freaky to, I can't scare them too much, so he would try and be cutesy with them as well by engaging them. I think he had a teddy bear in his hands, and he would make the teddy bear wave at them and so on. I'd never seen anything like it because, I mean, I just thought, like, there's no way. This man had one setting, and it was loud. But it's not true. You know, he was really awesome with the kids. It was so cool.
Well, he was a fixture on TV for years, wasn't he, in the 60s in... Was it Zed Cars?
Was it the beard, though? Because in Zed Cars, he didn't have the beard, did he?
He didn't have the beard,
and
no.
And he actually seemed more like a normal actor.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And as soon as
the
beard appeared, and you sort of
the
take
beard made him loud.
Cygnus Alpha from Blake 7, one of his...
Yeah, it's like a a reverse Samson.
Samson, yes. Give him a beard, and crazy just blurts out, and he's fantastic, and he's wonderful, and... But sorry, we're getting away from poor Philip. But...
Well, it's okay, because Philip Maddock appeared in Zed Cars.
There we go.
There you go.
What other things? How did he appear in Christian? Since
well, I've got a very interesting one for you, actually.
Yeah.
He's actually in the original, and I didn't even know this existed. The original version of the Bourne Identity.
I just saw that myself. Yeah.
Now this, I find quite amusing. Not least because there's an original version of the Bourne Identity, and it looks dreadful. But that there's an original version of the Bourne Identity, and Richard Chamberlain played Jason Bourne.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to be looking that one up right now. Oh, he was in your Sweeney as well.
It's not my Sweeney, it's everyone's Sweeney.
You love that thing.
Ah, Sweeney's brilliant. Except with you.
I still have to see it. Still haven't seen that. Oh, look, he was in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Do you guys know that?
Yeah. Hey, here's an interesting one. He was in a character. He was in something called Hawkmoor. In 1970. No idea what it is, but wasn't that one of the names that we discussed last week? In the Dark Dimension, was that the name of the bad guy, Hawkmoor?
Was it?
I'm not sure. Or maybe it was Hawkspur.
Hawks, yeah, something like that. It was close.
It was close
nice,
enough. Yeah.
Nice attempted segue.
Yeah, nice attempted segue, but not a very good one. Yeah. I also noticed he appeared in Rainbow as himself.
In when Rainbow is in Zippy Bungle?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. On the 29th of June, 1981, Zippy and George find out that they have to be careful while playing, particularly when Jeffrey is painting a chair. So presumably, in time on a tradition, Philip just popped round to read a story out of the Big White Rainbow book. About being careful and warning Roy Skelton's hands to be careful.
So, yeah, that's...
Isn't that bizarre kind of microcosm of the Hooniverse right there?
Well, Zippy was in itself a bizarre microcosm before you even connect to anyone else on that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, Philip Maddock, I think, what did he bring to Doctor Who? Beyond what we've already discussed about, you know, you're going to get the same, you know, type of character from him.
Do you know what, though? I think, not to cut you off there, but I don't think he did necessarily give the same type of character in Doctor Who. I think if you look at all the characters he played in Doctor Who, they were all very different.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting that you know, we say that when you cast him, you generally get him. But looking back at Doctor Who, I mean, out of all the characters in the Crotons, you know, he wasn't necessarily a villain there. He was trying to do what he thought was right.
Yeah.
I guess he was sort of like the jerk.
Similar to that in Crow.
What's that?
Similar in Crow as well.
Similar, yeah. But I mean, like, in the Crotons, he kind of wanted power, but he wasn't exactly power mad like he was in The Brain of Morbius. And then the War Chief was very subdued and very, you know, very calm. You know, they were all very different characterizations. And it's not something that I even considered with him before, because like James had said before, I thought the same thing. He was Philip Maddock, but they're very different when you sit here and you compare them, his at least the four TV appearances.
Is it the look then? Because he's got a very piercing glare. Very wide-eyed, piercing, quite a stern, almost teacher-like appearance. Maybe it's that. Maybe you're right. They are very different characters he plays. Yeah. Maybe it's a visual and the way his body language works that makes him feel so identifiable. Because I must admit, when I look back at classic Doctor Who, even though he's only been in actually a fair few. I know for a lot of guest stars, it's a fair number, but still over the most, he's a face that springs to mind that is sort of fairly quintessential to Doctor Who. And I don't know whether that's just because of the pictures that Peter Haining chose in his books in the 80s, which I read until they were as bare and as crumpled as the fellow teenager's copy of Playboy. But maybe it was something to do with that. Maybe that makes me identify with him, but he just seems so Doctor Who of the 80s. Maybe because he played those roles which in Doctor Who were so essential to what Doctor Who was about. He'd sort of be a very involved, slightly antagonistic character in some respect, especially towards the Doctor. And they're always necessary, aren't they, in Doctor Who? Maybe he feels so important to it, because he played a key role in each story he was in, which, whether he was the antagonist or whether he was the almost antagonist, there's still very key aspects to the show. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
And they were all very much pretty, pretty well-known, well-revered stories, with the exception of maybe Power of Kroll.
And the Crotons.
Well, Brain of Morbius.
50-50 thing.
What?
Sorry. I was going to say, Crotons is kind of like a 50-50 split from what I hear. Some people love it. You either love it or kind of one of those okay.
Really? Ones. I've never heard anyone love it. I mean, I don't mind it personally, but I've never heard any single piece apart from yourself there actually have anything really positive to say about it, which, as I say, I'm kind of surprised. I don't think it's that bad.
No, not at all.
But I would say certainly in media circles it gets a real harsh rumping.
Media circles are always tough, though. I mean, like, if they bash something, they think they're doing their job right. You know, they can't like it because
they think they're being clever.
Yeah,
I think there's a bit of that, isn't there? Yeah.
That's why I'm not actually. Nah, whatever. What were you going to say, Christian?
I would probably say. What was I going to say?
I don't know. What were you going to say?
Brain of Morbius.
Yes, that's where you were.
Yeah, I was going to say the Brain of Morbius. No, specifically about the Brain of Morbius. I think you, James, were speaking about having, you know, the face of Philip Maddock, you know, associated with Doctor Who, despite him only appearing four times. But I think it's when he's appeared is important as well. And, you know, he's appeared twice during the second Doctor, twice during the fourth Doctor. But specifically, in that key fourth Doctor era, you know, the you know, the so-called Gothic era, with Robert Holmes in the background, more on him next time. And, you know, pulling the strings and dragging all these different, with the help of Terence Dix, of course, dragging all these, you know, these various staples of the horror genre into one, and that's what you get with Brain and Morbius. And I think because he's this Dr. Frankenstein-esque lunatic who specifically is playing with a Time Lord, you know, there's this big Time Lord aspect to it. And, you know, in those that era of Time Lord stories, fans tend to eat them up because it's like that's when the Time Lords were interesting, not the IKEA Time Lords of the John Nathan Turner era, you know, but this when the whole Time Lord thing is explored in an interesting manner rather than going to visit them in their nicely shoulder padded, coiffured, meeting rooms and blankety blank sets. The Brain of Morbius is interesting and he's fascinating in it, and he's a really, you know, he's a really powerful character, and I think that's why.
That's a very good point, because with the War Games, I've never thought that the Time Lords have ever been as cool again. But what you're saying about the Brain of Morbius is also just as cool, because you're not seeing the big guys in collars, you know, and the tall collars and so on. You're getting this rich history about one character that's still making them sound just as creepy as they were in the War Games. So that's a very good point. It could be because those two stories touch on those elements.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's similar since, I think we can overlook the final part of The Key to Time, the Armageddon Factor, with John Nettle's mate turning up at the end there, Barry Jackson, as the Cockney Time Lord. As much as I like him, you know, it's not the same thing as Jax. Yeah, the nearest thing I think since then, and the Sixth Doctor went through it with his Time Lord mate. The only thing nearer to it that does that same kind of spin on the Time Lords is the Doctor's wife. That tells you something interesting and new about the Time Lords without having the Time Lords in it.
Mm. Well, that and of course the whole Time War setting, like forget the end of seeing them again, but the whole Time War setting kind of did it in a, you know, they're cool and creepy kind of way again, you know. So no, yeah, but you're right. So
yeah.
You're right. I mean, even starting like with from the Third Doctor's era and going all the way up, with the exception of Brain of Morbius, the Time Lords, just every time they were on screen, just kind of started to lose their cool factor or their creep factor or anything. Because I mean, like I said, in the War Games, when they show up, I mean, they just had awesome potential to really make them be creepy and something that the Doctor should have been running from, like we believed he was running from all this time. But then when you see them again, they were just like bunch of
old men.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
they just
it's a Tory gentleman's club, isn't it? We've done this before, though, haven't we? We've had this conversation.
Yeah.
Before.
Well, I mean, again, the blame has to firmly fall upon Robert Holmes.
Right.
No, but I think the problem is with Doctor Who is that Doctor Who plays a lot of pastiches on British satire and British culture, and unfortunately the Time Lords got hit on the niche of representing the stodgy British bureaucracy and hierarchy, which takes away obviously from their alienness, which I think is a great shame. I see why they did it.
Session at the local Conservative Club.
Yes, very much so. I mean, I know Three Doctors was pretty much the kickoff for this, so it's not fair to blame Robert Holmes for what was doing Deadly Assassin. It was already going down this road.
Okay. Let's go back to Philip Maddock.
Yep.
Specifically, he was Welsh.
Right.
Okay. Now, there's been a lot that over the years since 2005, more and more people that had appeared in the classic Doctor Who series have appeared in the new series. For a Welsh actor of his standing, isn't that slightly surprising that he wasn't one of them?
Oh, maybe he didn't want to.
That or they hadn't gotten that far down their list.
They didn't.
I would have thought it'd be quite high up a list. Now, I know he was at a recent... when Doctor Who Magazine had their anniversary party a couple of years ago, I know he was at that. So it's not like he was away from the world of Doctor Who. He was in a big finish, at least one.
But are there many actors really from the classic series which have been redistributed into the new one?
I don't think there's. I mean, I don't think they've. You know, no one's gone at it with a machine gun.
I was just trying to think of really how. I mean, I know there's been a couple. Obviously, I mean, obviously we can look at Bernard Cribbins as an obvious one who had a relationship with the Doctor Who movies.
Well, there's Christopher Benjamin. There's obviously Liz Sladen.
Yeah.
There is. Who else is there?
who played the Queen.
That's right. Yes, and Pauline Collins. Yeah, Pauline Collins. That's another one. There are a few more than you might think.
Are there maybe not many old roles in the new Doctor Who? Is that that could be a very big generalisation to make? But I'm just trying to think back. Is there not enough roles that would sort of incorporate someone like himself into being required? So it's not so much he's ignored, but does Doctor Who not really cater for those sort of character types, or does TV not really? Because I don't know. I'm just.
No, it's a fair enough point. Yeah.
I can't think of many old characters in Doctor Who, which is a shame, because if we take Bernard Cribbins as an excellent example in End of Time, who made that story pretty much. Well, I suppose John Sim as well was fantastic in it. But
David Tennant was quite good as well.
Yeah, David Tennant did do a very good performance. I know he's often overlooked.
He's quite popular, I believe.
Sometimes, well. Depends who you speak to these days. He seems to have lost a bit of his fan following from the critics, which is a shame. I think End of Time is a perfect example of where he was very good and very unique. But anyway, yeah, no, I don't know. It's a shame that Philip didn't manage to get back, but it's good that he did get into the big finish stuff, which has always been a great way of getting old classic actors.
That's a big place for them.
Which I'm very, very glad about. But, yeah, I think for me, he'll always... I mean, well, as I've said at the very beginning, that I had to agree with Tennant Americana over there, Brian. I'd like him best in the War Games, but I think I agree with you, Christian, so far as to me, iconically, he'll always be Solon.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I agree with that as well, actually. And it's fulfilling for me to know that you agree with me. Both of you.
Only not by choice, but, you know, there's times where you just have...
Well, that's right. It's my podcast. So, we're sad to talk about the sad loss of Philip Maddock. He was 77 years old. And although we remember him from Doctor Who, in that particular Henry Solon kind of a way, he was probably best known as a German U-boat commander in the classic sitcom Dad's Army, the very man, or the very character who inspired the exclamation of "Don't tell him Pike" from Captain Mannering.
You know, it's interesting too. I just did a Google search for pictures to see what Google thought was, or at least what the search thought was the most familiar. And, you know, aside from the first picture being him, probably in more recent times, the second picture is his appearance from the Dalek film.
Right.
And then the fifth one is from the War Games. And you don't get Brain of Morbius until, like, at least the second row of photos.
Right.
Oh, it looks like now, something I don't know if is that quite means clearly it. Not aware that it's your podcast, then. Google's not scared or feeling intimidated to follow your mandate there.
Yeah, okay. So that rounds up this week's Cast Derby's podcast with a K, which we've just focused it on Philip Maddock, mainly because he was Mendry Solon. And also because an actor of his veteran years and credits deserved at least something from three reasonably unimportant Doctor Who fans. Until next time.